Hello and welcome to the Nittany Dispatch. I am John Stauber, Penn State football beat writer at the Center Daily Times. She is Audrey Snyder, covering Penn State for The Athletic. And we are now home after watching the blue-white game. And
enduring.
A little less windy in my house than it was at the stadium today.
Yeah, this was definitely a very Big Ten-like spring game. The 39-mile-per-hour wind gusts were as bad as advertised. We mentioned this on our preview episode of like, oh, how much are we really going to learn with weather like this? The wind was worse than I anticipated. Like, it was just even pregame. I remember I was trying to take a rival video and I'm standing up there, you know, at the, like the concourse. And for a hot second, John, I almost like broke my phone because the wind got it. And I'm up there in the stadium leaning over. And after that, I was like, yep, okay, we're just calling it right there. Like, that's the limit of my video for the day.
See, if you ever see me up there doing those videos, you will see that I have my phone very securely in hand because I'm terrified of heights. So, not an issue for me.
Yeah, no, I was, you know, the wind, it was pretty wild. And I definitely think that had, I think we got a crowd estimate today.
No, I don't remember hearing one. I'm guessing that wasn't.
I'm sure it was by design that they did not announce one. I have to go
I will
back
say
to
when.
Something
when
like
we went down on the field,
stats. I don't know.
Yeah, when we went down on the field, though, at the end of the game, I got hit in the face with the wind as I was walking out onto the tunnel. And I just remember going, oh, my God. And then, like, pulling my hat down because it was about to come off. It was nasty. And it was not a ton of fun. Attendance on the stat broadcast, by the way, is listed at zero.
Nice.
It was more than zero. Yeah, but I'm guessing that wasn't accidental.
Yeah, it looks like I already threw my stat book out by the looks of it or lost it. So.
That's always fun.
Well, you know, so we won't have any stats today on the show.
Good news, I have stat broadcast pulled up. But you know who you won't find in the stat book and who won't contribute to that attendance, Audrey?
Boop, boop, boo. Who?
Keandre Lambert-Smith, who was not in attendance. Well, maybe he was in attendance. He wasn't on the field.
Or in the locker room.
Or in the locker room, as we learned in the postgame presser.
Keandre, we'll start
of course,
there.
Yeah, the subject of a lot of rumors, a lot of reporting, started to pick up a little steam early in the week. I think it's
Tuesday night, wasn't at practice?
Tuesday night, wasn't at practice, started catching wind of some stuff about how this was going to end. And then you never know, though. Kids can change their minds. You don't want to jump the gun on these sorts of things. Friday, I believe it was, Matt Zenitz of 24/7 Sports tweeted that Keandre was not with the team, and I believe the phrasing was something like possibly entering the portal or likely whatever it was.
Contemplating entering the portal.
And I have confirmed with a source you can find this at centerdaily.com too, that he is, as of now, or as of I guess last night when I had another discussion about this,
because
you know, it's the kind of thing that you want to check in on a lot, right, in case something changes. But as of my most recent discussion with someone with a source, that is still the plan, that Keandre Lambert-Smith will enter the transfer portal, presumably Tuesday when it opens. And listen, say what you will about the inconsistency and the issues and stuff, this is a blow to a wide receiver room that doesn't have a lot of numbers. And, you know, I know, like, the jokes have been made about, like, the early round pick and the star receiver, but, like, he is an important piece to this offense and someone that I think they have to replace the production for, right? I don't want to say that they're like going to severely miss him, but they might, right? Like, if they can't replace that production, they're going to miss him.
I think it really is this simple, John. Is this a better receiving core with him or without him? And I think it's pretty clear that it's better with him, especially when you have two guys in Julian Fleming and Harrison Wallace III who have both dealt with injury issues throughout their careers. Like, that has been the big knock on both of those guys. And yes, some of it is just bad luck, right? Like, sometimes stuff happens, right? Like, that's just part of the game. But for a room that has had this many challenges for this many years, right? Because a lot of this is feeling familiar.
Yes.
Not great. So, yeah, the expectation is that he's going to enter the transfer portal, which, again, could happen Tuesday. His name could trickle in Tuesday night. Could be Wednesday, Thursday, right? Like, whenever it formally happens, it's going to formally happen. But James Franklin was asked, because we did not see Keandre Lambert-Smith on the field. We were all kind of locked into that during warmups. he was asked about Keandre.
You know, there was some reporter who kept saying, there was some reporter who kept pointing and saying, oh, look, there's Keandre, distracting everyone else in there.
Distracting me, right? How many times today, John, that I have my binoculars out and I'd hear, oh, hey, look, there's number one. There's number one. And every time I'd look and it was Jalen Reed. And I was like, you got to stop doing this. You're messing me up.
To be fair, every time I... every time I said it, she looked. And honestly, that was all the payoff I needed. But no, yeah. Keandre was never indeed there, no matter how many times I said it to distract Audrey.
He was not there, but I kept looking and looking at the wrong people. But James Franklin did say, I have it pulled up on my story on The Athletic, basically as much of a punt on a question about a player's status as you're going to get. James Franklin said, I'm really happy to talk about any of the guys that played in the game today and are in the locker room. Besides that, I don't have much to tell you. So we know that he was not in the game today or in the locker room based off of that. James Franklin was also asked, you know, kind of about the future of the receiving core moving forward and his confidence level on that. And that, to me, is where this very much started to seem like last year all over again, when he said, I have all the faith in the world in our wide receivers in terms of talent and ability. We've got to take the next step. I mean, we've heard about this proverbial next step now for a very long time. I think so. Here's, to me, is the crazy part, right? You lose Keandre Lambert-Smith. You still have a ton of guys on scholarship in there. And since we know that is my thing and I love numbers, you've got ton of scholarship wide receivers. But you also cannot really afford to lose these top flight guys, especially at this point, because everybody now gets bumped up a little bit, right? And what I'm curious to see is the rest of that room going to stay intact in the next week, month, right? Because that's what I think you have to kind of think of. Because again, as we talked about on our preview show, I have them at 99 scholarships, and the push to 85 is going to have to happen somehow, some way. So I'm just curious kind of how they get there still. This will keep me up at night, perhaps.
Well, yeah, I think we'll see if they even get there, I guess, is the way I would put it. But to go back to the wide receivers and this proverbial next step that is always coming, was there anything you saw today? And again, same caveat I gave at the preview show of the blue-white game. This is one data point. It's one spring practice. They had 15 of them. You can't draw sweeping conclusions, but it is a data point and one that we have full view of. Was there anything that you saw today that gave you confidence that a next step can or will be taken?
Honestly, I felt like today as a whole was a... not even a little bit, was pretty boring. And I say that because the offense was very vanilla. And I don't want to take this as I say this and then people get mad and we never see a spring game again. Like, I don't want to.
Well, I have good news. People are going to be mad at you no matter what you say. So.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I can be polarizing, I suppose. But I think the offense was not right. If you came into Beaver Stadium expecting to see the Andy Kotelnicki offense and motions and all of this stuff that we've heard so much about this spring that players have raved about, you didn't get that. This was extremely vanilla. We did talk with Caden Saunders. Man, I am reeling today.
You talked to Caden Wallace today.
No, but he was there. He was on the sideline. He was on the Jumbotron with Ole Fashanu. But Caden Saunders, gosh, after the game. And he was asked, like, roughly how much of the offense did we see today? And he put it at 5%. Yeah. So again, I say that of, you know, if you're looking for data points and things that maybe excite you, again, this is not the offense. They did not motion at all today. So you have that, right? So I say that part and saying, what do you really take from it? But I guess the thing that maybe would give me some confidence, I thought Harrison Wallace, the third, Trey Wallace, looked really good. I thought he looked smooth. He got out of spring healthy. He and Julian Fleming both got out healthy, which was critical. But I think he looks like the fluid, big play athlete that you're going to expect. I also thought Caden Saunders had that one real nice catch that he made.
That deep crosser.
Yeah, Andrew Rapley, again, tight ends here, a little bit different. But I thought he flashed a little bit today. Like, I think you have some guys there that are intriguing on this offense. But again, I think you have to take all of that under the umbrella of this is not the full offense. And the quarterback play we can get into a little bit. I thought that was pretty underwhelming too.
And Julian Fleming was on the blue team without Drew Aller. So you can take pretty much nothing out of that.
Yeah. You know what? Was it you? No, I think because every time I looked at you, you tried me to look at the number one. I think it was Johnny McGonigal that I mentioned this to after the game.
That's true.
Or during the game. I was like, what do we make of Julian Fleming, AJ Harris, and Jalen Kimber being on the blue team? And I said, I took it as, hey, you're new here. You have to earn your spot.
But Nolan Rucci was on the white team.
Was on the white team, right? So, like, so you have that maybe. Like, there's one school of thought on that. And then the other thing was we did get a few reps where it was Amari Evans on Jalen Kimber or where it was Trey Wallace on AJ Harris because of the matchup. So I don't know what the staff is going for with that.
I think that's what it was. I think it was these wide receivers have to prove themselves, right? Get them matched up against the best corners, mm-hmm. right? And the way to ensure that is to balance out those positions a little bit, right? Have Kimber and Harris facing Trey Wallace and Amari Evans quite a bit, you know, facing Liam Clifford quite a bit, Caden Saunders. Having Julian Fleming, I think, on the other team may have just been like a, you know what you have in Julian Fleming, so you don't need to see that as much. Right. Like there's less.
I mean, we would like to see it, but it's never about us. Yeah. John. The fans, right. Not about us. Not. Yeah.
Yeah.
Get him healthy. Like, yeah.
I think that might have been it. That's just pure speculation on my part, but I'm with you. I thought Trey Wallace looked really good today. I thought he looked explosive athletically. I thought, and this will be music to fans' ears, I thought he separated really well today. And against AJ Harris, who like I have heard nothing but rave reviews about, right? Mm-hmm. Like I'm always hesitant to say things like that. The things that you hear about how guys are doing in spring ball, because you never know. And you're only getting, you know, at most a few people's opinions about things. So those things can change, but like there seems to be confidence in who AJ Harris is as a player, right? And what he's going to be at Penn State. And so I tend to think that, you know, there's a chance he's their top corner this year. Right. And by the way, Fleming also had to go against Cam Miller. I don't want to discount that, but like, it's different when it's not Aller throwing the passes. But yeah, I think Harris getting the chance to go up against Trey Wallace is big for both of those guys. It's best on best to me. And that's what you want. And those are the kind of valuable reps that, you know, you get in practice all the time. And maybe in the spring game, it's like, well, what's the value in Harrison Wallace facing, a guy that's, you know, eighth on the depth chart, right? And like not even like Elliott Washington or Zion Tracy, like guys that are like walk-ons or whatever. Like you need to get those guys real reps, and I think this is how they did it.
You said that, it made me think, right? Like one of the craziest mismatches we saw today was Abdul Carter on true freshman Egan Boyer.
Yeah,
and again, this is a true freshman playing left tackle, weighing 251 pounds, and Abdul Carter said he told us afterward, which we'll get into later, he's weighing between 250 and 255.
Pretty much the same weight.
So that was one of those matchups today where I'm sitting there and I was like, I don't really know what we're getting out of this when you kind of see some of that stuff. But yeah, the receiving core, it is what it is. I mean, James was asked about needs and portal potential positions that they might address, and he didn't really, I don't think, answer that part of the question, if I'm recalling correctly. So, no. But again, with their scholarship number, which again, maybe I'm too fixated on this, but I am who I am, and I cling on to weird things, as many That's of you right. know. You don't have a ton of space. Now, if there's somebody out there that is a must-add guy, they're going to have to do their damnedest to try and make this happen. But you wanted to get somebody here in the winter, because otherwise it's kind of like Cephas 2.0, where you get somebody here in the summer and they're playing catch up and all that. So I think at this point, you fans need to focus on the receiving core that is here now. You got to hope you keep everybody that's here, minus Keandre, because he's got 1 foot out the door. And just kind of
one
plan accordingly. Well, maybe 1 foot in some boxes. I don't know, but you know.
1 foot in the box is very good. I think if I were a Penn State fan, I would be planning on this being the wide receiver core. I think that's absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. I also think that the fitting another receiver in is not an issue from a scholarship standpoint. I think the point you make is a good one about, like, Cephas came in late last year. It's not ideal, but also it's one of those things. It's like, well, if it's all you got, like, you might have to do it again. Right. If they want to add someone, and I know James didn't answer the question when he was asked about it, but like, I would think that they have to be trying to get a receiver, right? Like, you can't lose a starter, which Keandre Lambert-Smith was going to be for all of his flaws. Like, he was still a starter on this team and one that produced at times in a big way. Like, I wrote that, I think it was
West Virginia game.
Yeah, 400 of his yards were across four games. Of his 673 yards were across four games. And you can easily look at the nine games where he only had 273 yards. But those four games, like, he was good, right? Like, and even if he's inconsistent,
Rose Bowl, right? The springboard that it was supposed to be, right? Like, there were moments, I think, there were flashes.
Yeah. I think the Rose Bowl one is always the biggest, not fallacy, but like it was one play, right? That like everyone, you know, really, really blew up on. But like the West Virginia game, I thought he was just good, right? Like, I thought he was making several plays. Indiana was like that too, where he made the big play at the end of it. There were other games where he had like notable performances. And I just think that no matter what you say about his career and the expectations or whatever, he was a piece of this offense that they were really going to rely upon, and you have to replace that now. And I think, you may have to replace that now. He's not in the portal yet, whatever, but
he's also not in the locker room.
Yes. He's also not in the locker room or at the spring game.
Maybe he's listening to the Nittany Dispatch. Maybe that's it.
I'm going to guess he's not.
Probably not. Yeah.
But if he is, hello, give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts.
Great,
hit the like
subscribe.
Button and subscribe. That's right. Hit like and subscribe. That goes for everyone listening right now and watching on YouTube. But I think like they have to look to Caden Saunders is probably going to be the first guy. And like, to some extent too, Liam Clifford, who has been someone that has gotten meaningful reps in the past too. I think
Packers backup quarterback, Sean Clifford, for those unfamiliar.
That's right. Audrey's favorite backup quarterback in the NFL. But if you're looking for a guy to step up, I think ideally you want Caden Saunders to win that, because this no knock on Liam has been valuable to them and a good piece to them, for them. But I think Caden just has more upside, and you know, in an ideal world, that is the guy that wins the battle. That's true at every position battle, right? You want the guy that has more upside to win it and then hopefully ascend to that higher upside. Otherwise, though, they will have to look in the portal, and they will have to try and find someone. Will they? I have no idea. The portal opens Tuesday. I'm not even going to pretend to know, other than probably one guy who's going to be in it on Tuesday when everything kicks off. But they're in kind of dire straits at receiver again.
I think the other part here that I want to get into a little bit, because I think it's interesting with the receiving corps, when you talk about getting the best receivers on the field, in this offense, there is an emphasis on getting guys and making sure they know every wide receiver position, right? Where it's something I was talking with Caden about, and he said, like, this is different for him, because previous years it was just, we want you to learn the slot, right? Like, you learn that side of the field, you learn the slot, you focus on that, that's it. He said when Coach K got here, that part of the point of emphasis this winter for all of them was, you know, they got all the wide receivers together and were like, hey, listen, you're not just a slot or an X or Z, whatever. You are all wide receivers, and we want you to know every position. Now, realistically, right, you look at a guy like Caden Saunders, his build, there's certain places he's going to fare better. But the point is, they are hellbent on getting the best guys on the field in whatever way, creative way they can. And that's where I think, no doubt, this is a better receiving corps with Keandre Lambert-Smith in it than without. But now you're banking on Trey Wallace. You are banking on Julian Fleming. You're going to need Liam Clifford. You're going to need Caden Saunders. You're going to need Amari Evans. Malik McClain, you're going to have to get something. I mean, to me, that's the other one that I think it's honestly, like, I kind of forgot about him, right? Because came on last year, had the start, fell to the bottom, and you know, and it's one of those things where I'm like, beyond special teams, like, it feels to me, again, despite having all the scholarships, all these positions, all these bodies, right? It just still to me feels like it's a very thin position group, and that's not how you want to be.
And the way that it cannot look thin quickly is if they're put in a position to succeed and they just take advantage of what's given to them, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and I think that's, and that might be oversimplifying it, but last year I did not feel like they were put in a position to succeed at all times, and they had to kind of create on their own sometimes, and they weren't always adept at doing that. If they're put in those positions by the coaching staff,
yep,
yeah, and in the offense, then I think like suddenly you go from like, oh, who's going to even contribute to, oh, okay, they've got five guys, right? Because I think those first five guys you listed, you know, Trey Wallace, Julian Fleming, Amari Evans, Liam Clifford, who am I forgetting that we just named
already?
Caden Saunders. Caden Saunders, who I would probably say is the starting slot. Nittany
Dispatch after dark. We're going to be a wild ride.
Yeah, it's a little late. But I think those five guys like can suddenly look like, okay, there's probably like three or four level, like starter level guys in there, and suddenly they're fine, right? And the other thing you mentioned, like Caden makes more sense in the slot. I totally agree, but I also think a good, you know, play schemer can put that guy on the outside and find ways for him to win, right? And I think that's why it's important for him to be able to know those positions that, you know, because we see smaller guys in the NFL win on the outside at times, you know. I think he's definitely at his best in the slot in all likelihood, but I think, again, it comes down to the offensive coordinator putting them in position to win regardless of what the you know, the stature or the size, and giving, taking advantage of their skill sets more than things like that. So yeah, I think honestly it's putting a lot at the feet of Andy Kotelnicki to kind of fix it all if they don't get another wide receiver. And I don't know. I don't know that he can, but I also definitely don't know that he can't. And the fact that they didn't show anything today,
5%.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll go ahead and say that it was zero. But like the fact that they didn't show anything today is like, it just makes it impossible to know whether or not he's going to be put those guys in those positions. I will say he said all the right things. What I've watched in the past of Kansas and Buffalo, I think he's a good enough offensive play caller and offensive schemer to put this offense in a position to be good enough to make the playoff. And that's what it's got to be.
I pulled the numbers up because I kept saying there's a lot of guys, including Keandre Smith and plus Peter Gonzalez and Tasir Denmark, the signees who will get here this summer. That's 14 wide receivers on scholarship. So you got to kind of assume that number is going to drop to 13 here at some point soon. But you kind of dig, because in my head, I keep saying, okay, like who are maybe some of these guys that, is there somebody from like that next wave that maybe steps up that we're not talking about, not thinking about? And like, that's where you get Anthony Ivey, Tyler Johnson, Carmelo Taylor, Josiah Brown, who early enrolled. Like could Tasir Denmark, right, maybe come in here and surprise guys? And this goes back to, again, you're not able to be here in the summer, but this was, I mean, highly coveted receiver. It's going to be a tough jump, but I just wonder if maybe there is someone else that perhaps, because they're going to have the opportunity, that maybe kind of steps in and surprises some people, because otherwise, yeah, you have what you have. And it looks like that number is going to dwindle here soon.
Yeah. And not just like dwindle in numbers on the back end, right? Dwindle in a pretty meaningful way. So yeah, I think honestly it's people may be sick about hearing us talk about it or see people like us write about it, but to me this is the story of the season. Like, yep, this will dictate it. And part of that is I don't know, I'm still pretty confident in Drew Aller as a quarterback, and if he's got the receivers that are in position to succeed, then I'm not worried, right? And the running game I expect to be really good, and so this offense will dictate it. Also because I think this defense is going to be really good.
Well, before we get to the defense, John, because you hit on the running backs, and I wanted to bring this up because I've been asked about it a lot today. We didn't see Catron Allen today, and that was kind of, James Franklin said that Allen did not practice this spring, but then I think he just misspoke on that because we did talk with Catron after a practice this spring, and he was sweaty, so he was doing something, right? But he was not there today. He was there today, but not participating today. Oh, gosh, we don't need to start that. I'm not here to spread panic. But the point.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not. Catron is fine. James Franklin said as much. Whatever he's dealing with, it won't impact him for summer training, won't impact him for next year. So he's fine. Nick Singleton was held out today. He warmed up. But again, you're talking about limited wear and tear. James Franklin basically said they were more interested in learning more about the third running back than they were in kind of exposing a veteran to some extra wear and tear. So I think that third running back, you're looking between Quentin Martin and Cam Wallace. I think that's those are the two guys that are realistically kind of in the mix there. I think, too, I mentioned Andrew Rapley at the tight end. We did not see Tyler Warren today. He was there, warmed up. Again, veterans, rest, no need. Offensive line, gosh, there were a lot of missing pieces there today. I have it. I wrote it down in front of me. First-team offensive line, left tackle Javon Williams, left guard Vengo Wane, center Nick Dawkins. I'll repeat, center Nick Dawkins.
Hold on. Go
center
ahead. Continue.
Nick Dawkins, for those
continue.
Of us who've had some questions about that this spring, John.
Continue.
Right guard Cooper Cousins.
Oh, okay. I thought so.
And right tackle Nolan Rucci. Drew Shelton was out all spring, which we've known that since the beginning of the spring. So again, without Shelton, this meant extra reps for Javon Williams. It also meant extra reps for Nolan Rucci. We did not. Anthony Dunko was there, warmed up, but I did not see him play a snap today. Again, could have missed it, but I did not see him on the field. He was there on the sideline, though. So to me, that right tackle position still is going to be interesting. But we didn't see much there today to really get a good look at it.
Well, that's the thing. I think in this situation, the offensive line might be the most difficult thing to judge.
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm.
For litany reasons, right? Like, part of it is there are missing guys, right? Like, they're just guys missing that we expect to either start or contribute or whatever. And it's not just that those guys are missing. So, okay, how do you, like, the guy playing is a second string. How can you expect him to do this? Whatever. It's that these guys are not used to playing with necessarily who they're out there playing with, right? And so much of offensive line play is communication and being on the same page. And especially in Andy Kotelnicki's offense with the way they kind of run wide
Coach
zone. Andy Kotelnicki's offense, the way they run wide zone. They have to be in constant communication or constantly on the same page, I should say. And so I think that is, it makes today like an impossible task for offensive line evaluation. Not seeing Donko was a little bit disappointing, I guess, because like Jameel Lyons was on the opposite team. I thought that would have been a good matchup in like one-on-one pass rush situations. But yeah, it's just, I don't know if there's a position that maybe the blue white game does a bigger disservice to than the offensive line, right? Just because it's like, it's kind of impossible to know. I still think I'll say this broadly. I think it's going to be a really good group. I'm not concerned. I think they're not going to have Olu Fashanu for sure at left tackle. They're not going to have that lockdown guy, but I still think they're going to be good across the board. And I think this is going to be maybe not necessarily the strength of the offense, but part of the strength. Like, I think the running game will be the strength, and like part of that is obviously the offensive line, but it'll be in conjunction with how good the running backs are too.
The one play in particular that concerned me, and I didn't get a chance to talk to him afterwards, so I would like to know a little bit more about what happened on it, but the Bo Prabula pick. There was nobody near that ball as a Key Wheatley had the interception. That to me was one of those throws where I was like, oh my gosh, like what just happened there? I did think, and again, like there, it was super, super windy, like not the best conditions by any means. But there were some throws from both quarterbacks that you're looking at and you're like, man, like you expected them to connect on this, right? And maybe the timing was just a little bit off. And for whatever reason, to me, I did not think either quarterback looked particularly sharp today. And we did see Jackson Smolak. He was there with a bulky brace on his left knee, which, again, we know he sustained a significant injury this spring, but he was there around the team, so it was good to see that. We saw Ethan Grunkemeyer a little bit as well. I felt like this was just not a very sharp day from the offense as a whole. But again, you've got all these moving pieces, so take with it what you want. We saw Prabula with the blue team and the white team. Aller finished on, we had completions on 15 of 32 passes for 202 yards, one touchdown, that one going to Andrew Rapplier late in the game. That to me was kind of like maybe the highlight of the day for the offense. Coming very, very late when if anyone was still there in the stadium, and there were people who stuck around for sure, But to me, that was kind of the moment where it's like, okay, there's some positive momentum to carry into the offseason here. But yeah, for the rest of it. And again, you know, it's not live with the quarterback. So it you know, you do have some limitations there where, okay, Bo Prabula takes off and runs, but in a real game setting, you know, things would look a little bit differently.
Yeah. And for those of you watching on YouTube, you will see me trying to find this play on my second monitor as Audrey was speaking there. But one of the ones that stood out to me from the, you know, you mentioned the wind and the impact standpoint was that deep ball on the opposite sideline of us to Trey Wallace, right?
It was to Trey Wallace. Yeah. I believe so.
Couldn't find it in the play-by-play. I'm sure it's there. But like, it was one of those throws that it felt like it was on the money in the air. And then it was like, did that drift because he put too much air under it? Or did that drift because the air is blowing crazy that way? and it's because it overextended, or was he trying to cut through it or whatever? And so like, that's the throw that we've seen Drew make time and time again. That's when I was like, okay, like it's going to be tough to know. Now that being said, there were still some great throws. I thought the fade to Trey Wallace that he dropped in the end zone was a beautifully placed ball. Looked like Wallace might have looked over the wrong shoulder at first and then tried to readjust and couldn't bring it in. Question for you that I forgot to bring up earlier, even pre-pod. Uh-oh. Were you alarmed by the number of fades that were attempted around like 10 to 15 yards out today?
I always am. I just kind of have some flashbacks. Yes, but again, I don't like, I just am very curious because of the limited looks that we saw. But again, like, you're not going to waste practice time on things that we're never going to see, right? Like,
right.
So to me, the fade is here. It survived the changing playbooks. But yeah, I would say I was a little alarmed for sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a believer that the fade is the worst play on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I feel about running it three times in a row. Or even
I know how I feel about it. Don't
twice in a row. At least it wasn't to like, at least it was to Trey Wallace, right? And Malik McClain. And it's like, okay.
Trey Wallace with that crazy big vertical. Yeah.
Yeah, and Malik McClain 6'4". Yeah. But yeah, just one of those things that I filed away. I was like, maybe. I don't think it's going to be anywhere near the issue that it was at times under Kirk Soraka, but like,
never forget
to file away at the very least.
File away, maybe bury it. maybe bury it in the playbook. I felt underwhelmed by the offense. But again, it's 1/15. It was purposely vanilla. The wind was brutal. It is what it is. But I do think in terms of momentum and building toward the season, they got out of there healthy, and that was significant. And you were able to get a guy like Javon Williams a ton of reps this spring, right? Like, that's what ultimately, like, I think we have to all remember, spring ball is about the younger guys. And as much as we want to make this spring about Drew Aller and Nick Singleton and the receiving core, and for good reason, given that there's a coordinator change and all the struggles of the previous year, the reality is, like, this is still the best chance to look at your roster long term. And one of the things that came up post game with Liam Clifford, with Drew Aller, they said, you know, they've spent time talking about how they want to handle the next few months and what maybe they want to do differently in terms of workouts and preparing as they head into the summer and kind of continue to build that chemistry, continue to dive into the playbook. And that stuff, I think, is just as arguably even more so important than what just happened here in this past month, because you're halfway through the off season now, John, and it feels long at times, right? You go from January to now, but you've got from now until we're going to blink and we'll be in Indianapolis for Big Ten Media Days in mid to late July, because they keep moving the darn thing up every single year, it seems.
Yes, they do.
You know, and so how do you maximize that time? And I think that's where your leadership is going to matter. But yeah, I think for the offense, again, they know what they put on film. They know what they got out of it. James Franklin seems satisfied. So again, we saw 1/15 of it. Don't overreact. Take it all, I think, just with a grain of salt.
Well, and notable, and to that point, Tyler Warren didn't play today. Mm-hmm. Nick Singleton and Catron Allen didn't play today. Are they not the three most important skill position players in the offense this coming year? You know, like, it's one of those things. It's like, how do you judge it without the three best players out there? And I say that about Warren. Like, Warren, I think, has again, the more you talk to people, I think he has a chance to be a highly drafted player next year, and someone who really blossoms in this next year at Penn State as the guy at tight end. And potentially, I don't think it's impossible for him to be the leading receiver, right? I think that's on the table.
Oh, no, that option is well on the table.
Yes. And so, you take him out, you take Catron Allen out, you take Nick Singleton out, and what do you have left? You don't have most of your offensive line, right? It's – you get on the list of reasons why this isn't entirely indicative of where things are, and I think, you covered it well, but I wanted to make that point too. Like I said, the defense, I think there was one main interesting thing today, well, a couple with the depth chart, but from a broader, viewpoint, they came out the first rep. They were in the 4-2-5. Right. They were in what I would always call the big nickel, with the third or the fifth defensive back being a third safety rather than a third corner. And they stayed in it. Right. This was not a one off thing. And now who knows if that is going to be the case when they move to the regular season and play West Virginia. But for all of the this is a 4-3 scheme, it was very much not a 4-3 scheme today that we watched.
Yeah. The old 4-2-5. The other part of this,
a scheme that I prefer for what it's worth.
The other interesting thing I thought too, and again, what does it matter? Maybe something, maybe nothing, probably nothing. The starting defensive ends, right? We all were like, okay, we're going to finally see Abdul Carter coming off the edge. Well, John, who were the starting defensive ends?
They were denied Dennis Sutton and Amin Vanover. And Audrey, what did James Franklin say about Amin Vanover, and what did you take that to mean?
He's had a great spring. He's done it the right way. They think he is good upside. They like how he's trusted the process. Again, because I am a skeptic, that is my job, to think critically and skeptically about this program and every aspect of it. In this era of transfer portal, I take that as, hey, remember, Amin, we really like you here. We know we're very talented at defensive end, and we've got a lot of talent there, but we want you to be part of that rotation. I kind of took it as that. Maybe I'm misreading it. Totally possible.
I don't know. I think that's part of the era we're in now, though.
Absolutely.
I'm just speaking broadly, not necessarily about those comments in particular. Mm-hmm. I can easily see that being why that was said today. Listen, last year, Catron Allen was talked up quite a bit after an early season game when there were plenty of discussions about him too. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He wanted the ball. Yeah, I forgot about that.
When he said he wants to score. He's out there. He wants to play too. All that stuff. But this is a part of being a head coach now, right? It's publicly selling your guys, whether it's
you
James
are constantly or, recruiting and re-recruiting your own roster. Yep.
Right. Whether it's James or Kalen DeBoer or Dan Lanning, Steve Sarkisian, whoever, all of these
Ryan
coaches.
Day.
All of these coaches are constantly recruiting their own roster. And part of that is saying things publicly to reinforce those ideas, right? To prove that to some level that you're not just saying them in private or whatever. I think that's a massive part of this. I don't know if that's what that was today. I would not be surprised at all if it was. I wouldn't be surprised at all if a few weeks ago when James Franklin said that they had seen more consistent flashes from Keandre Lambert-Smith, that's what that was too, right?
I think that very well might have been what it was, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
That's part of the job. This, to be clear, this is not a criticism of anyone for doing those things. I think it's a necessary thing for head coaches to do and a smart thing to do.
Absolutely.
But I also think it then requires people like you and I to think more critically about why things are being said in certain situations and why things are happening. And look, I tend to lean your direction that's probably what that was today. But yeah, it was notable to me that Abdul Carter was not starting. Now, Abdul Carter did not play a ton, but he also didn't start.
Yeah. And now I fully do not expect that'll be the case in the fall. But I think too, it is definitely part of the head coach's job, right, to manage this roster and to figure it out. And again, I'm not saying that to say that they're not satisfied with Amin Vanover. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying, again, this is a possibility. Think about it that way, because this is the era that we're in. These are the conversations that are happening in every locker room, right? And we would be naive to sit here and lie to you and say that everyone on every roster is always happy and, no, these are human beings. These are how these things kind of go. But we did have a chance to talk with Abdul Carter after the spring game, which was the first time we've talked to him since last year, first time since he switched positions, which, remember, Abdul Carter was the one who wanted to make the switch. We learned that when spring ball started. And so he was asked about that today, and he had what I found to be a pretty blunt answer, which I appreciated, about why did you want to switch to defensive end? And he said, this is a chance for me to do what I do best, just get after the quarterback, play fast, and not have to think. Just do what I do best and get paid. I like it. I mean, I like it a lot. I think it's smart. I think you look at the NFL.
I think it's honest, which is important.
Brutally honest. I love that. Yeah, like absolutely respect that. Appreciate that. And I think, though, there is a good point there. And you and I, we've had that conversation off air. We've had it on here about Micah Parsons and how he felt that it was pretty mismanaged and how, you know, we all wanted to see him play defensive end, and that, you know, obviously Penn State planned to do that, and then COVID happened, and you all know the story from there. But I think it's smart for Abdul to recognize this, and for kind of his team of people, that those around him, his family, and say, hey, like, this is best for me. I really believe in myself. And you talk about a gutsy thing, which I love to hear this, because I think it's kind of gives you good insight into Abdul's mind. He said that because he's very close with Chop Robinson. Chop was actually on the sideline today, like giving him pointers throughout the scrimmage.
He also looks exactly like Chop Robinson.
Yeah.
To a shocking degree.
Yes. Yes. Like, you could tell me that those guys were brothers, and I would say, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Chop has longer hair, and it's not that long, but he has longer hair than Abdul. And like, that's the, like, and their tattoos are obviously very different, but those guys have like legitimately could be siblings with
others. And they, when they got here, that was one of the things when Chop got here, like they were both kind of, I remember him telling us they did a double take and they're like, wait, like,
yeah.
Yeah. So good. Like, two great, great and interesting personalities. But there is a close relationship there. And Abdul Carter said, yes, that he told Chop, if I was a defensive end last year, I would have had 15 sacks. So he said they have a little competition going on this year about the sack total. So I think that'll be
wild,
insane, right? So maybe we see Abdul like going crazy, trying to pad the stat sheet against Bowling Green or something like that. But I do think he's primed for a big year. I mentioned earlier, he said he's playing between 250 and 255. And he said that Chuck Losey said, like, they're pretty content with that weight, but if they want to bump it up, obviously that's what these next 3 months will be if they do. So I thought, again, he looked really, really strong. Just his get off, the way he's able to move, it's special. So I did appreciate kind of hearing, you know, his reasoning for the move, but the fact that, hey, get paid, right? There's opportunities there. There's intrigue when you look at this in the NFL aspect, which I think is really a smart way to look at it for him.
Well, and I think this is also, this maximizes things for Penn State, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is, again, ostensibly a 4-2-5 defense. And for anyone who doesn't believe me, this quote, this is from, for what it's worth, the player sheet that Penn State gives out. I was not at Tony Rojas, but they send us the quotes from.
We got sent quotes today. I didn't even know that. Yeah, I guess
we did.
My email.
The question essentially was about Tom Allen, which changed from Manny to Tom Allen. It hasn't really changed as much. The difference is just more nickel and more of a two-back look. We played some nickel during third down situations last season, but really it's the majority of every down with Tom, which, yeah, like it's a lot of being in the nickel, which is, I think, to be expected. This is what Tom Allen does, right? It's what his defense has looked like in the past, but I think it's a nice confirmation that this is more of what to expect. The reason that matters for Abdul Carter is because you have Kobe King, who I assume will be, they mentioned having the dot on the helmet. I'm going to assume that Kobe is probably going to be one of those guys. James said they would have one guy on defense with it, or that they did have one guy on defense with it. Mm-hmm. And presumably Kobe is like in a good spot to do that. And then you want to get Tony Rojas on the field. And it's like, well, if Abdul was at linebacker still, it's much harder to have both of those guys on the field too in this scheme. And so it maximizes Abdul Carter. It maximizes Tony Rojas. It maximizes Kobe King. Like, it puts all of those guys in a much better position to succeed. And it really just sets the defense up to be monstrous again this season.
Yeah. It's good for Abdul Carter. Good for Penn State. And I think that to me is, again, you talk about depth and a ton of it. Penn State's secondary, I still think the way they've, and again, Jalen Kimber, AJ Harris were on the other team today. So again, like, take it for what it's worth with what you saw. We did see Jalen Reed as that fifth defensive back, which is interesting. And we've talked on here about it before too, about, you know, would that fifth DB be a corner? Cause they have a plethora of corners. Well, now we're seeing it come from the safety room. Right. And, what does that maybe mean for Zaki Wheatley, who had the pick today and started today? And he's somebody that, perhaps, you know, this is his chance to kind of step into a starting role. So they've got a lot of guys. And then, oh yeah, on top of that, John, who's the guy that's been garnering a lot of buzz this spring? I'll spot you three letters. He and I share the first three letters in our first name.
Yeah, Adavian Collins has received a lot of praise. Got the start at corner today. Now, that being said, and important to note, AJ Harris and Jalen Kimber were on the opposite team, but he was the other starter along with Cam Miller at cornerback, which means that he started ahead of Zion Tracy and Elliott Washington. And I'm not going to draw 500 conclusions or even one definitive conclusion out of this. But it's, again, it's a data point that, okay, when they publicly play in Beaver Stadium for the first time, he was the one who got the start, you know? And I think that maybe it doesn't matter. People don't think it matters to fans or whatever. I think that matters to players though. You know what I mean? Like you want to be that guy, you want to be that starter. And so I think that's notable. And you know, you notice too that when they went to the big nickel without KJ Winston, who I saw had a cast on his hand,
yes.
When he was walking around on the field post game, he obviously did not play today. So when you have one of your starting safeties down, that did not they did not pivot away from Jalen Reed as the fifth defensive back, right? As the line position, they instead just backfilled with another safety, right? Which I think is notable too, because it means if something happens to one safety, I'm guessing they're not going to suddenly shift Jalen Reed back there and then have someone else in his spot. I'm guessing it's far more likely that it's someone like King Mack or someone, you know, Dakari Nelson or whoever, a safety backfilling in that way. And so I think that's going to be something of note moving forward that I don't know. I just think that position is going to come from safety more often than not, especially with what Tom Allen asks that player to do. There are more Sam linebacker responsibilities than there are cornerback responsibilities at times, which means you're blitzing a little more, you're filling against the run a little more, and you want a guy that's bigger. And one, that's why Jalen Reed makes so much sense, but two, that's why like it doesn't make as much sense to have someone like even Daquan Hardy on last year's team, right, in that spot just because of the size.
Yeah, maybe we'll have a segment this fall, John, called Odd on Audavian or something like that, a weekly.
No, we won't actually, and we'll never do that. So I promise. Never do that. I can. You have my word, listeners and viewers. We will not have that segment under any circumstance.
We'll spare you from it because we're going to need that time so I can give you my weekly Christian Driver updates at Minnesota.
That's right. I do
want to say, because you talk about public praise and what it means for players, these spring clear, award winners. Go ahead.
A little disappointed that you did not mention my weekly updates on Dante Seifert at Kansas State. Come on. What are we doing?
Well, we're going to have to, like, we need a catchy name for that.
If we're going to lean into the bit, like, this is the biggest bit that we've had since we started this.
We'll have the gone but not forgotten segment, right?
That's right.
And every week, well, I guess we might have to add another player to that, too. Perhaps.
Maybe.
Wow, that three, the wide receivers, gone but not forgotten segment. What are they up to these days? We can even like go back in the Rolodex too and like some other guys that have long, like years ago, right? Like Justin Shorter.
It's got to be, as far as I'm concerned, it's got to be guys that either you or I believed in, right? That we were like, this is like, he's going to be the real deal. And then it doesn't pan out and they head somewhere else.
Oh, like Noah Kane.
I was actually on that one. So here's the thing. I thought Devin Ford was going to be the best back in that room. So we both missed. But yeah, this is going to be a great segment for us as we continue to do this. And Cephas is the clear leader at the front of it right now.
Oh, for sure. But in terms of public praise and what it means, they did announce the Spring Gam Award winners, which I took issue with this because it used to be a thing that was at halftime and then it happened today while I was walking down to the field and not near my laptop.
Yeah, we were heading down onto the field, yeah.
Was not in my best interest today, but among these Spring Ball Award winners, Audavian Collins was one, Liam Clifford was one, Riley Thompson was honored for his work as a specialist for the only they didn't give him this qualification, but I will. The only senior, sophomore, junior, freshman punter, Riley Thompson, was
honored.
He's
never been a freshman.
Never, ever.
No, wait, no, he's never been a sophomore. Is that the one?
I don't know. I
think he's a junior. Yeah. Whatever he is. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, he was honored. Cam Miller was also honored, and so was Nick Dawkins. So again, these are awards that the coaching staff decides on, which I think gives you a good idea of who the leaders are, who the staff like publicly wants to praise for what they've accomplished this spring. So again, to me, that's always notable. But yeah, Audavian Collins, I don't think anybody on this team, by the sounds of it, helped themselves this spring more than he did. So that was kind of one of the big things today that I feel like today just kind of reaffirmed that.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I'll be curious to see what it means for everyone at that position, right? Like, I don't think I'm speaking out of turn here and saying that the corner is a position worth monitoring moving forward, right? And sort of how it shakes out from a roster management and a depth chart standpoint. Just one that we don't have a ton of information on, and one that I think we're going to get a lot of information on over the next, I don't know, 1 week to 5 months.
Yeah, well, I believe it's 10 cornerbacks on scholarship. So again, pretty.
It's a lot. Like, guys want to play.
Number 10, yeah, 10 cornerbacks. So you gotta kind of look at. I did want to mention there was a moment today where John almost got depleted on the sideline by King Mack.
That's not true.
He was running straight towards you. Everybody said like, move, get out of the way.
No, I got. Listen, hold on. That one I pivoted away, as everyone did. The one that you tried to trick me, you got me back for all of my pointing out Keandre Lambert-Smith. You said heads up, and I flinched at a ball that was 20 yards away. Like, it was not getting close. It's like, of course, you said heads up. Well, this is a perfectly normal reaction. But no, when I think it was when King was coming over, like, I was out of the way cleanly. I handled that, if I do say so myself, like a pro. I have covered many a high school football game where I'm standing in that exact position. I've had to make that exact same maneuver.
So if you ever, I've never gotten hit on a sideline. There've been some couple close calls. There was one at a spring game a few years ago, or like more than probably a decade ago, where I almost got drilled by one of the kickers. Like they were going and somebody like they missed poorly. It was like early during warmups. I just remember there were looks of like horrified recruits that were like, get out of the way. Which like come to think of it shortly thereafter, we've not been allowed on the sideline pregame. So that was like during the Bill O'Brien era.
But I've never gotten hit,
thankfully.
I was a sports clerk at the Indianapolis Star when I was in grad school. And so I covered a lot of high school football around Indianapolis when I think I was covering an Avon high school game, which matters because that's where Isaac Garendo played. Isaac Garendo, who was at Wisconsin, then at Louisville, and is off to the NFL draft now. He was very fast then. I thought he was excellent. It was a lot of fun to watch. I think it was an Avon Ben Davis game. And there was a ball where like I would shoot a lot of video on the sidelines, and you're shooting video and you see the ball coming in and like you don't process it quick enough and soon enough, like, you get hit, but like not by the ball, by someone, right? And you'd go down, whatever. The other one I was covering, I think it was a Penns Valley Bald Eagle game when I was covering high school sports for the Sunday Daily Times, and it was probably 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And a ball came my way, and I saw it, and I caught it one-handed. You know, it's like one of those moments, like, yeah,
I got it.
But it was, yeah, it was like, oh, you thought I was gonna get hit by this? But no, yeah, I think those are the only two that I can think of. The first one, I got destroyed. I just remember vividly the memory I have of it is from like my phone, like as I was watching on the screen as oh, ball's coming, and didn't react.
There's anyone out there listening and the slim chance that you have video of John getting hit? There's
no chance.
I will pay.
I may have
to see this video.
I may have the video somewhere. I'd have to look for it of the play, like of you would see the ball and then you would see like the tumble of the camera itself.
Yeah, it's a but I wanted to bring that up because Joe Hermit, Penn Live photographer extraordinaire, yes, was back on the sideline today after he had gotten decleated last year by Dante Cephas. And Joe is now back, working his way back to full health. So that was certainly nice to see him out there today. Great photo on Penn Live of Joe getting James Franklin trying on a tuba today during the post-game festivities. I don't know if this was like supposed to happen or not, but usually like the recruits, especially after the spring game, they line the field. James Franklin goes one by one, shakes everybody's hands. Well, today, like they're standing there, all the recruits, the players do the alma mater.
Yeah.
And then the recruits just started walking on the field and like nobody stopped him. And the next thing
I was very confused.
Yeah, they had like he had the band on the field, the recruits on the field, the players, the coach. It was a very nice, organic moment. But yeah, at some point during all of that, James Franklin, I guess, tried the tuba on. So we did see that. But yeah, kudos to the folks that stayed for the entirety of today because it was very windy. And again, you weren't seeing the most scintillating stuff, but it is football and it's April. And whether we like it or not, and we definitely like it, the weather's going to turn here really soon, maybe even as early as Sunday. And it's going to finally be springtime. Yeah, 12 hours from now, it's going to be springtime. And it's going to be nice. And it just, to me, the spring game is just the reminder that you're one step closer to the football games actually mattering to everything, kind of getting revved up. Yeah, it's kind the midpoint.
That, right through, about through that halfway
very
point.
Very long off season. And, you know, the other kind of crazy thing, too, is that the way the calendar is, James Franklin even alluded to it. He'll be mentioning, or he'll be not mentioning, he'll be meeting with the players on the next 3 days. So Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
So the position coaches will meet with the players first, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I think it was.
Yeah, and Monday, Tuesday, half day, Wednesday. Yeah.
And then he will meet with them after the players meet with position coaches.
3 weeks after, which I was kind of curious on that timeline because I'm like, well, if guys are leaving, like they're, you don't need to, you're not going to meet with them because you're going to kind of know. But yeah, there's going to be a lot of meetings that are going to be unfolding here in the next days and weeks. And, you know, off of those meetings is where guys who are maybe on the fringe or guys who are planning on leaving or planning on staying, right? Like that's where these conversations get solidified. James Franklin did say that he kind of met with the leadership council, it sounded like last week, to kind of discuss like best ways to move forward and what they think they need to do best as a team and those types of things. Because we've heard it all off season. I'm sure we'll hear it as the season nears. The best teams are the ones that are player led. So I do think, you know, you still have to figure out kind of who some of those leaders are in this group as you do every year, right? Like that's always the natural change that happens, but we will see what happens with the portal because there are always seemingly always surprises that unfold here. And that's kind of what made this thing a year round sport because you're going to have guys coming and going. It's the natural order of business these days.
And we will be here to discuss it when those things do happen. I do think that there is I'm trying to choose my words very carefully here.
Ooh boy.
I do think it could be a pretty surprising week.
Surprising? Surprising how so, John? What do you mean? Can you tell us a little bit more?
Yeah, go ahead and give us a 5-star rating review on Apple Podcasts if you're listening there. Hit that thumbs up button down below if you're watching on YouTube. Hit the subscribe button. That always helps us. But no, if again, you want to be careful in what you say.
Yeah, for sure. I was needling, John. I know what I was doing.
But I don't want listeners or viewers to think that we're like withholding information. Like when you have,
we're also not setting the world on fire and spreading panic.
Yes, people also.
But if anyone needs any tips on moving, I can tell you.
Yeah. People also probably know that you and I do hear things, right? Like we're not. Now, there is a level of willingness a threshold that you have to hit to be able to report something, you know, that is that you and I have, I think, as an ethical thing. But like, you know, this is a platform that we can use a little, not loosely, maybe, but like we can discuss things. And I do think that there is a window for stuff to happen that's unexpected. And I think that might happen broadly across the sport. And I don't think Penn State is immune to that. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, and I think, and that was because one of the things I'd gotten from a lot of people, again, and I'm sure you did too, in the past week, they're like, you know, I would put something out there of like today, right? It's, I was like, hey, I do not see Keandre Lambert-Smith on the sideline. That is me doing my job, doing my due diligence to make sure he's not there. And then I'd have people quote tweeting me or people replying like, well, yeah, he's gone. He's for sure gone. And I was like, maybe, possibly, but like again, we're in the business of fact-based reporting, and so like you can't just see that. And there's
that's why when
there's rumors and there's speculation, but like again, we cannot run with it as journalists. So I just
wonder. Right. And that's why when you hear things like earlier in the week, like like you can't just say he's leaving. Keandre is allowed to change his mind as well. Yep. Right. Like even from now until Tuesday, he is allowed to do that. And so like reporting anything definitively is
and it's hard.
It can be dangerous, right? Because you can say like the way that I phrase it is that he's planning, according to the source that I spoke to, like he's planning to enter the portal. And that's really as definitive as you can be about something, right? Because that's not even that definitive, but that's as of right now what the plan is, right? And the plan can change in 3 minutes. You just never know. But like it's not something concrete. Like, when we're with reporting on like NBA trades and stuff, it's like that's a whole different thing, right? Like it's a different way. Yes. But it's a different thing in the way those things happen and why they happen the way they happen. And so like there is more, I think more certainty in those situations because the people that are being dealt with are like people have incentive to leak those things in those situations, I guess is the best way to phrase it.
And the other thing too to remember, and I'm not suggesting that this is going to happen, but I think it's a good cautionary tale. When Devon Townley Jr. entered the portal last winter, I think the start of last winter. And then came back
after the 2022
season. So, okay. Yes. After 2022. So he entered the portal and then he came back, which is very rare. And yes. I know a lot of teams have had conversations, Penn State being one of them, of like, okay, if you enter the portal, like you are essentially giving up your scholarship and deciding, like there's been conversations with that where that was like a really unusual circumstance that it kind of unfolded the way that it did. But yeah, I mean, it makes you wonder. And I know that a lot of people, right, the thought process is, well, it doesn't matter if we don't get a guy out of high school now and we recruit him. We'll just get him in the portal later on.
Far
not necessarily, right? Like, yeah, in theory, that makes sense. Like, yes, you want to have those relationships, but this is a highly competitive business, right? And this is a sport that is changing by the minute. And I think all these windows for every team in the country, when the portal opens, it gets crazy. And then you've got the coaches that are on the road recruiting. And, you know, the best spot that a program can be in is when you're not getting hit with surprises, right?
And Penn State's been really good at avoiding those.
They have been, right? It's been pretty low drama. And that's, I think, what kind of made the Keandre Lambert-Smith thing a little surprising, even though we didn't see him at practice on Tuesday. In my mind, right, like, and again, this is the era we're in. When you don't see a guy at practice now, you start to wonder. Again,
well, that's like, it's one of those situations like you immediately
navigate. Yep.
Yeah, you immediately check in with people about it, right? Like that's when you start to be like, "Hey, is this something, or is he like sick or in class or what?" Like you try to find the answer. And yeah, I think it's a fascinating time. Like it, like you said, like I said, like player retention has been a massive strong suit of James Franklin and the staff. We'll see if that continues to be the case. You just never know with each portal. Like I said, though, we will be there to cover it along the way. Audrey over at The Athletic, me at the Center Daily Times, centerdaily.com. Here on the Nittany Dispatch, we will be back talking about it whenever we see fit, which will probably, I would guess, be sooner rather than later, depending on how things go with the transfer portal. Don't forget to follow Audrey on Twitter at oddsnyder4. You can find me on Twitter at John Sauber. Thank you for tuning in. Have a great day.